I'd like to thank Jason for the prayer this evening. I'd like to say that we are thankful for your presence, especially any that are visiting with us. We're glad that you chose to be here and hope that you can come back and be with us again. We will, Lord willing, be together again Sunday morning at 9:30 a.m. to continue with our Bible study and our worship period, and then 5 on Sunday evening. So hopefully you can come back. As we have been going through our study this quarter of the divided kingdom, we're kind of taking a little bit of a break from the narrative that we've been kind of going through. And we've come to 2 Kings in a section where we're going through the miracles performed by Elisha. So if you want to turn to 2 Kings chapter 5, we'll be picking up with the story of Naaman and his healing there in chapter 5. Again, just to kind of reiterate what we said last Sunday, it's important for us to go through these. To me, it's important for us to go through these miracles because it shows us the power of God, God's means and efforts to try and bring the people back to Him through the workings and the prophecy of His prophet Elisha. Again, these events, these miracles that are performed, we don't know exactly when they took place. Some of them expand a period of time. We do know that there are, it mentions kings, it mentions kings of Israel, other nations, but doesn't really give us any specifics except when we get into one of our stories here shortly. We're going to see a specific king of the Syrian army is named, but there were multiple kings with that name, so still can't put a finger on which one exactly it was. But anyway, as we go through this, let's remember these things. Elisha's trying to help show through the Lord for the people to return back to God. So in chapter 5, we kind of picked up, we were talking about Naaman being healed. There's so many things in this story, we could spend a lot of time there. And I just wanted to spend a little bit more time this evening talking about Naaman and the situation that he goes through. But just to kind of recap where we got to, Naaman, a great man. He had had lots of victories against Israel. He's the leader of the Syrian army. And in one of his raids, he goes and takes a little girl from Israel, and she is a servant to his wife. And this little girl, in her working, says, oh, that he could go see the prophet in Israel and be healed of his leprosy, because Naaman had leprosy. And as he goes to his king and says, hey, the little girl said this, he says, well, let's just go to Israel, and I'll send you to the king with a letter to get him to heal you of your leprosy. So he does. He goes to the king, and the king gets all upset, tears his clothes because he's like, am I God that I can heal you of this leprosy? And Elisha hears of this, king tearing his clothes. Apparently it was a common thing, but yet when it happened for the king, it was something that was found out through the land. And Elisha knew about it, asked why. He told him why. He says, well, send him to me. And we saw Sunday as Naaman is coming to Elisha. Of course, he's got a huge entourage with him. He's got lots of gold, lots of silver, changes of clothes. He's got several people with him. It's a big deal. So he comes to Elisha's house, and how Elisha interacts with him is he sends his servant Gehazi out to meet him. And what does Gehazi tell him to go and do? All right, go dip in the Jordan 7 times. A very simple command. A very simple action to take for Naaman to be healed of his leprosy. Now, how's Naaman react to this? What's that?
He's insulted.
Insulted. Gets angry. He's upset. He's like, why didn't he just come out and wave his arms and, oh, heal the man of his leprosy, make a big show? It's kind of the way I see it. And he just gets upset. It's like this river Jordan, at the time, it very well could have been over its banks. It was muddy. It wasn't very clean. He's like, are the rivers of my land not better? Why can't I go wash in them? And I mean, he had all these excuses and all these reasons to come out and say, I don't want to do this. And he leaves in a rage. But who steps in?
Servants. The master, you know, if he had asked you to do something,
Yes. So I want us to focus a little bit on the servant here. This is somebody who is a servant to Naaman, and he's very humble. He approaches his master humbly, and he says, "Master, my father," actually is the way it's written in the New American Standard, "if he had told you to do something fantastic, would you not have gone and done it? If he told you to run 500 miles and flip 50 times, would you not have done something great? But instead, he told you to go dip in this river 7 times to be clean." Now, what does Naaman do here? He's angry. Now what is he? His reaction. He's humbled. He concedes. He thinks about it. So what an example for us when we can go to somebody and give them a little bit of advice or give them a little bit of a nudge or give them a little bit of help, try to help them see the truth. And what a change you can make in their attitude. Just like this servant did for Naaman. And what a change Naaman made in his attitude in that he listened and he humbled himself. He says, "Okay." So what does Naaman go and do? Goes dips in the Jordan 7 times. Is he clean after the first time? No. Fourth time? No. He has to dip 7 times in the Jordan. And when he comes out of the water, how is he? The 7th time. Clean, his flesh was like that of a little child. He'd been cleansed by God of his leprosy. Because he sought to have that cleansing, he went to the man of God to get that cleansing. The man of God told him what he needed to do. He rejected it at first, but he was told differently. He was swayed to not reject it. And he obeyed. And he went and dipped and was cleansed. So again, for us, we look at Naaman and say, "Hey, this was a simple task. To go dip 7 times to be cleansed." Listen to what God tells us. Listen to what He asks us to do in our lives so that we can also be rewarded like Naaman was. All right, as the story continues, now we see that Naaman is cleansed. So you can imagine his feelings at this point. He's feeling what? What do you think Naaman's feeling right now? Gratitude. He's thankful. He's happy that he's cleansed of his leprosy. And so he's excited and he's going to Elisha to confront him, to give him a gift. He wants to go to Elisha and give him some of the gifts that he's brought. Remember, he brought a lot of information, a lot of things. 750 pounds of silver, 150 pounds of gold. And 10 changes of clothes, along with all of his servants and the people that were with him. So he goes to Elisha. What does he offer him? He offers him a gift. What can I give you? What's Elisha's response? Yes. Right. And I appreciate that, Sam, because I was actually going to get to that after the gift part, but you're right. Before the gift was given, he acknowledges that there is no God except the God in Israel. And that's going to come into play here in just a moment as we continue with this story. But then he tries to give Elisha gifts for what's happened to him. And Elisha refuses. "No, I don't want anything for what's happened to you." Why would Elisha refuse those gifts? God had not told him to accept anything, and this was done by God. Elisha didn't cleanse him of his leprosy, God did. Now I feel like Elisha here is giving God the glory in this, because he's not trying to accept anything that Naaman wants to give him. Now, Naaman continues on. When Elisha refuses, Naaman ask him to pardon him in something. What does he ask him to pardon him in? Or first off, what does he ask for to take back with him when he leaves? A load of dirt. Why was he wanting a load of dirt?
Dirt from
the Holy Land. Yes, he wanted to take some dirt back with him from the land where he was at. And what was he going to do with it? He's going to build an altar, offer sacrifices to God Jehovah, no other God, because he's already made the proclamation there's no other God except the God in Israel. And he's going to offer a burnt offering to God. But then he asked for pardon in something. What does he ask for pardon in?
He was concerned when his master would go to worship them, I believe, and he had to hold his arm when he bowed to them. Concerned about that.
Okay, so him being captain of the Syrian army, pretty high up fella in that army, he has a good relationship with the king. Apparently he goes in with the king to worship this false god, Rimmon. I think that's how it's pronounced, Rimmon. And he asked Elisha, pardon me when I walk in with the king and he's on my arm and we bow down before this idol. Why does he ask for pardon in this? He knows that's not the God. Because he'd been part of that worship for how long? And he probably asked for the cleansing of this leprosy, no telling how many times. And that God could do nothing for him. But God of Israel, God Jehovah, did. And he realized that. So he wanted to be pardoned when he walked in with his king and they bowed before this false god, because he knew it was a false god. And Elisha says, go in peace. So be it. Now, he left and was headed back home. Now let's focus on the servant Gehazi. What does he do? Oh, that's it. He sees dollar signs. He sees the wealth. He sees the gifts. He sees the monetary things that are being brought forth by Naaman and his group of people. And he sees that Elisha has turned it all away. He gets greedy. He gets greedy. So he has a thought, thinks to himself. In verse 20 of chapter 5. Behold, my master had spared this Naaman, the Aramean, by not receiving from his hands what he brought. As the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him. So, Gehazi runs after Naaman, and somebody sees him coming. And they stop, Naaman gets down and says, what's going on? Everything okay? What's Gehazi's response? Okay. First thing, as Sam pointed out, he tells a lie. He says, my master has sent me. So that's the first thing. Lie comes out of his mouth. And then he proceeds on with another story about these two servants or prophets coming out and needing some things. And so what's Naaman going to respond? How's he going to respond to this? I mean, Naaman wanted to give Elisha a gift. And now here his servants come in asking for something for these two prophets. He's like, here. He's being very generous. I'll take a change of clothes. Take 10 changes of clothes. I'll give you double. Take it. So he loads this stuff up on the servants, these two men. They go ahead of Gehazi back. They take the stuff off of these servants, put them in the house, and then those servants leave. And then what does Gehazi do then? Where does he go? He goes to see Elisha. Now, it's kind of funny here. What's Elisha's response to him when he comes in? Where have you been? Where'd you go? Remember what happened to David when he would tell a lie, and then one lie would build upon another lie, and then that lie would build upon another lie. What's happening with Gehazi here? One lie after another after another. We see it building. He comes in and says, I haven't been anywhere. But this is the thing that we need to see. What did Gehazi not realize about Elisha? He's a prophet of God. He hears what God says. God's done told him, I saw you when you was approaching the chariots. Was my heart not with you when you approached the chariot? And then you received this money, received this gift, you received all these things. I refused it. So what was the end result for Gehazi because of what he did here? Very important thing here. Therefore, verse 27, the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and to your descendants forever. That's a harsh punishment. Because not only did it affect Gehazi at the time, it affected his family going forward. Sin has consequences. Sin has major consequences in lots of ways. And this is one of those situations where we see a consequence hitting Gehazi because of his greed and the lies that he presented at this point. So that's the end of the story of Naaman and his healing of his leprosy. I love this story because if you're teaching somebody baptism, this is another example of something that's very easy to give an example of to show water baptism can save you. Not that water has anything to do with it. Because it didn't matter what the water does. It's what God does for you. All right, anybody have any questions or comments through the story of Naaman?
I was looking at a website that had 103 reasons why water baptism was not necessary. And it ended up instead of saying that it was like you always hear it.
Yes.
And that's what he had to do in order to be clean.
The key word for this situation and going to the Jordan is obedience. You're given instruction, you follow the instruction, and you get the results from following that instruction. And in Naaman's case, 7 times dipped in the Jordan, he was cleansed of his leprosy.
Lance.
Yes, sir.
Good. You know, Christ uses this example. I think it's Luke 4. Talk about those wouldn't even recognize Jesus as a prophet. But he brings up Elijah, he brings up Elisha, and in that he says there was no other one, there was lots of lepers at that time, at the time of Elisha, and only Naaman was healed.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, he even talks about Naaman, and in a sense he talks about his servant as well, because he and his descendants had it from there on. And I don't know, it's amazing to me that he had been with Elisha and seen some of these things and didn't understand about Elisha being a prophet of God from the standpoint. I mean, probably he didn't, probably knew it, but he didn't internalize it or whatever. But you think about what God tells us in 1 John in chapter 2, 15, 16, somewhere about all the things that are in the world, the love of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life. No question that affected him, that desire for those things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no different than if he was here today. We have the same out after us with that Satan uses to get us.
Yes, absolutely. Those things are out there, and they're trying to draw us in. Not very good. Anybody else? Sam? Right, because if Naaman had gone and dipped in those two rivers he mentioned from his homeland, what would have happened? Nothing. Because that wasn't the instruction. That wasn't the command. That wasn't what he was told. But yes, we live in a society where people want to please me. And we can't do that. We've got to please God. Greg? Yes, very, very true. Very good comment. Anybody else? All right, the next one we'll talk about is the axe head floats. This one's pretty short and simple, but I think it's another valid point for us to think about in regards to what happens here. So the sons of the prophet, they're apparently living in an area that did not fit their need. They needed to expand. May have been just the small area was too small. They needed to be able to grow more food, have more livestock. No telling what the reasoning was. So they wanted to go to the Jordan and cut some trees and build them some houses, build them a place to live. And so they asked Elisha if they could do that. He said, sure. Elisha then is asked, well, will you go with us? And Elisha says, okay, I'll go. Well, as they're felling trees and cutting trees down, one person apparently has a borrowed axe, and he's chopping a tree, and the axe head goes flying off, and where does it go? Goes into the water. Of course, we know that it's iron, so what happens when iron hits water? It sinks. Don't know how deep the water was, but it's apparent that this axe head was not retrievable. And what is this person's reaction when this happens? He goes running to Elisha saying, hey, help, I lost my axe head because it was borrowed. He was feeling compelled because it belonged to somebody else. You know, how many times you see people borrow things and they don't care if they give it back to you or not. They don't care if they break it or not. This person apparently had a real good feeling about having borrowed his axe head and he'd go missing. So, well, how does Elisha take care of this problem?
He asks about where it is in the water and he shows him, and with God's help, he brings it to the surface.
And how does he bring it to the surface? Through God's help. By what means?
The stick.
Now, what does a stick being in the water have to do with a piece of iron floating? Absolutely nothing. But again, we see an example, just like the meal going into the pot of food. We see the stick going into the water and something happening from that. God made it happen. But God told Elisha, throw the stick in the water, and that's how it came about. God told him, throw the meal in the pot of stew. That's how it came about. He tells Naaman, go dip in the Jordan 7 times. That's how it come about. What kind of pattern are we seeing here that the people of Israel should be learning from? Obedience. Do it. God's in control. But yet, they don't get it. We, on the other hand, have it right here. We can look at it and see it, understand it, and know we need to be obedient to our God through these examples of these miracles. All right, so that one's pretty easy. Anybody have any comments about number 8? All right, number 9, the blind Syrians are trapped. This is in 2 Kings chapter 6, beginning in verse 8. So here we see that Syria is warring with Israel. Again, we're not told what king is over Syria. We're not told what king is over Israel. We just know that Syria and Israel are at war. All right. What's happening with the man of God? What is Elisha here telling the people of Israel what's taking place? What kind of information is he giving? Okay, the Syrians are making plans to come and raid the land. But Elisha keeps going to the king of Israel saying, hey, the Syrians are going to be here, you need to avoid them. Or the Syrians are going to be here, you need to avoid them. And it tells us this happened more than once. So the king of Syria is going around trying to do this, and he's not having any success because of Elisha. Elisha and his telling of this information to the king of Israel. So what does the king of Syria say to his people when all this is taking place?
Who's the traitor?
Who is for the king of Israel? What's the information given to him about who it is? Elisha. Elisha, the prophet of God, he knows what you say where. All right, let's think about that. Who knows what we say in our bedroom? God does. Elisha knows what this king is thinking, even in his closed doors in his bedroom, because he's helping the king of Israel avoid him. So now that the king of Syria finds this out, what's his plan? Let's go. Find out where he lives. We're going to go get him. So they find out he lives in Dothan. So he takes a grand army with him to Dothan. And during the night, they come and surround the city with horses and chariots and this great army. Now, Gehazi, of course, is still with Elisha during this story. What happens when Gehazi comes out to do his daily chores outside? What does he see? He sees the great army. What's his reaction to this? How would you react? Nah, I'd be scared. What are we going to do? We're surrounded by this great army of this heathen nation. So he goes to Elisha and he tells him, what are we going to do? Here's this army. What's Elisha's response? What kind of faith does Elisha have here? Don't fear. The ones that are with us are a lot more than the ones with them. Now, if you're the servant and you're looking at this grand army around here and you're looking, it's just you and Elisha, you're like, okay, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So Elisha takes care of that for the servant here. What is he telling? What does he pray for to happen? All right. Open his eyes. Now this is a story that's really amazing because in one point in time, this man gets the opportunity to see God's army. What does he see? He sees the hill, the valleys, and the hills filled with horses and chariots of fire. God's army. Okay? So as the army is approaching, they come to Elisha. What does Elisha then ask God to do for the people of this army? Make them blind. Make them blind, Lord. Does God answer Elisha's request? Immediately. Every single person in the army is blinded. And Elisha says, y'all come with me. This is not the place. This is not where you want to go. I'm going to take you where you want to go, so you can find the person you want to find. So they leave, and where does he take them? Right in the middle of Samaria. Now, what's special about Samaria? Capital city. It's fortified. That's where the king is. And he takes his army into Syria. And then when he gets there, apparently the king's present, the king of Israel's present, goes there. What does he pray for then? All right. Lord, return their sight to him. Now, you can imagine being the Syrian army here. You're in the middle of the town of the enemy. Unexpectedly, because you've just been blinded, you're disarrayed. And then here's the Israeli king saying, here's this army in front of me. What do I do with them? Do I need to kill them all? Well, what is Elisha's response to that? And why? Yeah, is this the way you would treat your captives if you were in battle and you had people come to you and your prisoners? Is this how you treat them? He was making the king of Israel think about compassion for these Syrians who were there, who were most likely confused, shocked, scared, no telling what the attitude or situation was with those people. But instead he says, set them down, feed them, give them drink, give them food, and send them on their way. Now, what kind of impression does this make on the Syrians? Okay. And it specifically tells us that the martyring bands never return. Now, of course, the martyring bands are the ones that just come in and grab little here, little there, little here, little there. And probably Hal Naaman probably came in and grabbed the little Israeli girl that he had as a servant. But it tells us specifically that the martyring bands from the Syrians never again came into Israel. Why?
Pretty obvious they weren't going to be victorious.
Made an impression on them because it showed them that they weren't in control. Here they were going to this city to capture this man, one man, and they lost all control. A great army lost all control. So, a very good story, very good point. Very good point for the king to learn as we see this take place with Elisha. Anybody have any comments through number 9?
Back to your story.
Yeah, no doubt. He, like Naaman, realized there is no God except the God in Israel. Because he never came back. He knew he could not win if he tried to come back in after that event. I mean, that was very, very humbling for him to see that to happen to him and his army. Anybody else on any comments or questions? All right, so number 10. I failed to put the last one in there. We'll hit it probably at the first of next class. We'll try to get through number 10 before the bell rings. But I want to talk about the Shunammite's land being restored, which is the first part of chapter 8. It's a very short one, but that was another one that I meant to add in and fail to. But let's talk about the siege of Samaria. Again, we're going to see a situation where we've got a king of Syria, and this king of Syria is named Ben-Hadad. This is the one time when we see an actual name given, but of course there's several Ben-Hadads that occurred through this time period of history, so we're not sure which one it is. But anyway, he comes in with his army and he besieges Samaria. He has taken the land around and encircling the city, cutting off anybody going in, coming out. And there was already a great famine in the city because apparently he had been cutting it off for quite a while. And he gives some information about how much a donkey's head is sold for. Everything is expensive and there's no food. So what happens is the king's walking along the wall and a woman comes crying out to him. What is the woman crying about? Okay, woman, two women, two sons or two children, and because the famine is so bad, if you look back and read secular history, you see it was common in cities that were being sieged for cannibalism to occur. And we see that happening here in this story. Two women, got two children, and one woman talks the other one into giving her son up for them to boil and eat. And then she does, and they eat. The following day, they were going to do the other child so that they could have some food, but the woman hid her son instead of doing what the other one did and cooking their son for the food. So we see that this woman hid her son, so she's distraught. She goes to the king of Israel and says, "Help me. Help me." How does the king of Israel react to this? Tears his clothes. I mean, he is upset because of this taking place. This really makes him sick. All right, he's got sackcloth on, and the situation turns him so distraught. Who does he blame? Blames Elisha. Here he knows that Elisha is a man of God. He's a prophet of God. He's very powerful in through the power of God. And he wants to kill him. I want to take his head off of him. So he sends his right-hand man to go and find Elisha so that he can kill him. And does Elisha realize what's about to happen? Yep, God tells him what's taking place. Elisha knows that the messenger's coming, and as soon as the messenger comes in, they close the door, and we'll pick up there and do the other one I talked about and prepare for lesson 8 starting on Sunday. Thank you for your attention and your comments.